diversity isn't just hiring white women.
Welcome to the Jackie Ray Show. Welcome back to the Jackie Ray Show. I'm, of course, your host, Jackie Ray, and this is the second episode of my new show. I'm so happy you decided to tap in with me. And as you saw from that clip, we have some heat coming up very soon. Dexter Henry is going to be joining me. He has 18 years in this journalism game as a sports reporter, sports commentator. He currently works for the New York Post. You can check him out if you're on the East Coast with New York sports. If you're a Knicks fan, you definitely want to tap in. Maybe he'll give you some encouragement on how things could be. We talked about the Clippers. We talked about the changing landscape of journalism. And we talked about a two-year-old clip from Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach Todd Boyles that conservatives are circulating in an effort to push their racist agenda, perhaps. We're going to talk about why they're using this clip and why Todd Boyles has not addressed it. But before we do that, I wanted to tap in real quickly on the Super Bowl. I know you guys watched it, whether you cared or not, because who that nation? What was you doing? I was sitting here getting some work done, desperately and anxiously waiting for Usher to take the stage. Now, let me tell you right now, I am biased, okay? Because I am a diehard Usher Raymond fan, okay? But I have some criticisms. Not a lot. But the main criticism that I have is, and I get it, I get wanting to make sure that people don't know your music can get the fastest exposure to it as possible. But as a diehard fan, I wanted to sing a little bit more. You know what I mean? 3.5 seconds per song, that was a lot. I didn't like that at all. I didn't think Alicia Keys' outfit once she got up from the piano was very flattering, but I might be in the minority about that. She definitely cracked and she kind of messed up one of my jams. You know, my boo is my jam. She didn't sing it right, but it's live and it's an arena and it's probably a lot. So I'm not going to, you know, make her feel bad about that because she's still Alicia Keys. She's still dope as hell. So we just gonna let that one ride. But my main criticism about the show was the camera angles. It's Usher, y'all. If y'all have not seen his show in Vegas, too bad. That's amazing. Y'all missed out. But the camera angles could have been a lot better. I like the camera angles when they were skating on the stage, but maybe I'm just spoiled because Beyonce's camera angles were insane. Y'all felt like y'all was in a whole experience, but that's how she is. She's very meticulous about what she does. But I was still very happy to see Usher, and he got 2 more minutes than everybody else has had. It's so beautiful. I'm sorry. Had a moment. But still number one Super Bowl performance of all time that shall never be beat ever in life is Prince playing the guitar in the rain. Nobody in life will ever play a guitar in the rain. Usher, you did good. You're definitely my top five. If I had to rate them, I would put, obviously, Prince is number one. I'm going off the top of my head, y'all, so don't judge me on this. I'm going Prince number one. I'm sorry, I'm a diehard Janet Jackson fan. I'm putting Janet Jackson at number two, Beyonce at number three, obviously Dre and them at number four, and then Usher at number five. Those are my top five, okay? Just feel how you feel about it. I don't care. But while we were all having a good time, either having drinks and not paying attention at all to the Super Bowl or doing whatever we were doing on Super Bowl Sunday, there was a whole incident happening in Texas that I don't really know the backstory on it yet, so I'm still going to be looking into that. But there was a woman who took her 5-year-old child to Joel Osteen's church. It was apparently right after the Spanish-speaking service had let out. She went in there, she took a long rifle, and she started shooting. Thankfully, there were some police officers already at the church. That happens a lot at these mega churches where there's always some sort of police presence because that's just a lot of people. That I think the church can hold something like, I think there were 16,000 people at that service, but it can hold a lot. It's just a lot. I think they get like 45,000 people between the services on a Sunday each week. So that's a lot of people. So I'm not surprised that there was a police presence there. Here comes my problem, though, okay? Because if you don't know, if you're new here, I am a big proponent of police reform. I do not think the police in the United States have nearly enough training. Not even remotely close. We probably need 4 times as much training as they have because we have far too often police officers who can't tell the difference between a water hose, a phone, or a cone, and a gun. That's crazy. That doesn't even make sense for me. I can tell the difference, and I'm not walking around here with a weapon that can kill anyone at any potential moment. That's crazy to me that they don't have that kind of training. On top of that, because I did work for the police department in Denver, Colorado, I know police officers have to be post-certified. So you have to go in and you have to prove that you can effectively and accurately use your firearm. So when I say accurately, I'm very intentional about that because I am from Colorado. I used to go and I used to do target practice all the time. I actually very much enjoy shooting. It takes away my stress, but I specifically love the target practice and trying to hit a target from far, far away or a smaller target. But the accuracy of it is it takes training. It takes a lot of training and a lot of practice. And so I'm a little troubled by the fact that, A, this woman brought her 5-year-old child with her to wreak this mayhem. But in the police trying to eliminate the threat, they shot the 5-year-old. And here's why I have a problem with that. We're talking about, now the baby just turned 5. It's not like, you know, 5 going on 6. So maybe it's a baby just turned 5. So it's a small child, adult woman. And this child is wounded by police fire as they're trying to neutralize the threat. Again, more training, more accuracy, being more intentional about the way you use your firearm instead of just shooting it off willy-nilly. That's gang member type stuff. You just shooting innocent people in the crossfire. You're supposed to be a trained professional. You're supposed to know how to issue deadly force and eliminate the threat with minimal casualties to innocent civilians. That's your whole job. Your whole job is to protect and serve, which, fun fact, if you look at most cars across our nation, remember how they used to say protect and serve on the bottom? That's gone. I feel like that's very intentional. I also feel like it's very intentional that the police chief said, hey, you know what? Whatever happened to that child is the mama's fault. Okay, I will agree with that. It's the mama's fault. She definitely shouldn't have brought that child. But where is your obligation to, I mean, can you aim? So that's troubling to me. That's the first thing. The second thing that's a little troubling to me is Joel Osteen. Now, he's weird. I know I'm going to make some people mad by saying that man is weird. He just gives me the ick. You know what I mean? And he's also the same guy that was like, oh, we can't let people into the church because the flood water is coming up when there was that flood down there. But then a reporter went out and was like, I don't know if y'all see me, but I'm just walking around. And then the next day he let people in. To me, he's not a religious leader. He is a motivational speaker and a businessman. And I think that's my problem with him is something's just not firing on all cylinders there with me. And now I will say this. I know people have nervous tendencies, right? So this could be his nervous tendency. So maybe just do a written statement. Don't address the media with a whole smirk on your face. Now, if you're watching this, I'm going to show you a quick clip of it. If you're listening to this podcast, make sure you take a second and just let me know. Is this weird to you? Take a look.
First off, thank Chief and the mayor and Chief Pena and all of these men and women did an amazing job. And it's just, you said it, Chief, it could have been a lot worse. Of course, we're devastated. I mean, we've been here 65 years and have somebody shooting in your church. But
I agree with pretty much everything he said. It's the slight hint of joy in his voice, though, that's troubling me. Y'all let me know if I'm weird on this one. This one definitely bothers me, but it also could be my bias. I'm going to say that right now. I don't like the man. So it could be a little bit of that. One day I'm going to break down all the reasons why he troubles me. He's been troubling me for a long, long time, but we'll get into that. But right now, I want us to get with Dexter Henry and let's talk about these Clippers. I wish y'all could hear some of the conversations we always have before and after the show, but trust me when I tell you, some of y'all ain't ready for what me and Dexter Henry be talking about. But his energy is great. He is a sportscaster extraordinaire. He's been in the game for over 18 years. I'm so excited. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to get into some sports, but you know how this show goes. We're going to get into a little bit of everything. So I started off this way because the last time I was on his show, he asked me a question that I had an honest response to, and it wasn't the best response, but it was honest. So I'm going to ask you, the Clippers right now are looking pretty good. Kawhi has been healthy for a long period of time. He's doing great. He's playing, I think he's shooting the highest from the field and beyond the arc that he has in his entire career. Russell Westbrook is looking the happiest he's looked in a very, very long time. And James Harden is not being a distraction. It's a big deal what's going on for the Clippers right now. So Dexter, mm-hmm. How do you feel about the Clippers?
Yeah, I feel like I should be flipping this on you and asking you how you feel about
Clippers. You already know my answer.
So it's funny because I brought you up. This was in a conversation maybe like a couple days ago. And I brought you up because I said, you know, my friend Jackie Ray is always saying the Clippers are going to clip. This is what you have to say with the Clippers. She's like, you know what time it is. You know how people in LA feel about the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. And I'm going to give credit where credit is due. I am usually on the Clippers are going to clip bandwagon train. We haven't seen it from them. However, this team is playing really good. They're playing really good basketball, folks. Defensively, they're good. They figure things out. Remember when they struggled after they first got James Harden? Well, they've started figuring things out. And I think what works for them is they're so good with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Guess what, folks? Being healthy, that matters a ton. Those guys have been healthy. Kawhi looks as efficient as he probably has since 2019. Mm-hmm. It's been fantastic. That's my only concern here with this Clippers team is, can they stay healthy? Everybody seems to know their role. We'll see what happens when Zubac gets back. Their big man rotation has been good since they added Daniel Tice, going along with Plumlee, who's now back. I think the thing about this team is they're good offensively. They're also good defensively. They can spread things out really well. Harden has accepted his role as a facilitator, and he has really unlocked a lot of things for this team. We knew they needed a point guard. They've been trying to upgrade that the last couple of years. And then you talked about Russell Westbrook, Jackie. Russell Westbrook deserves a lot of credit. I thought he deserved more credit at the beginning when he started with the Lakers last year for how he adjusted his game and came off the bench. People called this guy selfish, which I never thought was right or true. I was a Russell Westbrook fan. Does he have limitations to his game? Absolutely. Does he struggle shooting the ball? Absolutely. But one thing I love about Westbrook is he never cheats the game. And you're seeing that. He's accepted his role. I think Ty Lue deserves a ton of credit here for managing all the stars on this team. We got to give this man his flowers. He's one of the best coaches in the NBA for my business. Now, the real thing we're asking here is, can the Clippers get to the NBA Finals? Yes. That's the real thing. I know this is what we're trying to talk about here.
Right.
Here's the thing. They are the team, in my opinion, in the Western Conference that is suited to give the Denver Nuggets a run for their money. They've had a deep run in the playoffs. They've got some bigs, three bigs that they can throw at Jokic. I think that matters. They have two really good perimeter defenders, and they've got somebody they can create in James Harden. I think Clippers, Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals could be a great series. I would still take the Nuggets, but I think this Clippers team can definitely give them a run for their money. And it wouldn't shock me. The way they're balling right now, they're a contender. You got to say that. They're a contender.
I mean, I don't want to say it.
Yeah, I know you don't want to say it.
I will say this. You said something that really resonated with my spirit, because I remember when Ty Lue took over in Cleveland and I was like, oh, hell no, this ain't going to work. This ain't going to work at all, you know. But he has really shown that his best. First of all, I love that he has no problem telling people to shut up, sit down, and listen. And I think that's important when you have a bunch of superstars on your team. I think what I didn't expect for the Clippers is exactly what you said. It's a team full of superstars. And I really just didn't expect them to gel this way. But I think because they're superstars and they all are used to playing at an elite level, the goal is to win. And so when you're an elite player, how do we win? And it's a full stop. People who called Russell Westbrook selfish, that was kind of weird to me. Because have you been watching this man? That's not, he'll take over if he feels he has to, but he's not a selfish player. He's a player that wants to win. And he's a player who also has short-term memory. That's why people think he shoots too much. He already done forgot that he missed the last 9 shots. Like, he doesn't care. He's still going to keep shooting. For me, I would love to see the Clippers and the Nuggets in a series, just because I'm from Denver. I've talked so much trash about the Clippers for so long. It would be a great series for me to see. I would automatically become a temporary Clippers fan in that situation.
It would happen.
I know. I should probably edit that out.
I feel Jackie, blink twice if you're okay. I'm not sure.
I'm okay.
Just making sure. But here's, you know what? To your point on that, Jackie, the thing with coaching, I think that people sometimes don't give enough credit to the good coaches out there. Is they say, oh, yeah, well, people say this dumb stuff. Oh, I could coach the Clippers because they have a whole bunch of talent. Nah, man, you can't, because it's about being able to manage those egos and get people. And these superstars who are great have egos. That's how they got to where they were. That's not me saying that with any bit of shade. But Ty Lue, if you remember, when they were struggling, when they first got James Harden, I think they lost four games in a row. He said, look, give us 10 games. We're going to figure it out. And he started figuring things out. He was very confident and calm. And I think that spread to the stars and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and James Harden to saying, okay, our coach is calm. He's not tripping on this. We are going to get this figured out. And they have. Yeah. And they're playing with a very, very, very high level of confidence. Just watch their game against the Heat the other night. They're playing with a high level of confidence. Game. Here's the thing about the Clippers, because you and I talked about this before. It's just like here in New York with the Nets and the Knicks. I mean,
your hopes get so high.
High, but no, hey, nobody still cares because they're not the Lakers, right? Nope. Like, that's the thing. Nobody's going to care until they actually do something. Mm-hmm. And the Clippers know that. The Clippers organization knows that. They know that. It's a good thing they're finally moving out of Staples. They're getting their own arena. I get good for them. But they've got to get it done.
And even if they do win, everybody's going to be like, oh, that's so cute. You got your first one. Yay, you. Yeah, it's not going to be a 17. Whole like, oh my God. Yeah, it's not going to be like that. The Clippers are just always going to be that team. We're struggling to manage the egos in Laker Nation. So y'all go do your thing while we figure it out over here. But that's a story for another day. I want to shift gears a little bit because, again, you and I are both journalists. You got 5 years on me in this game. But we've seen a lot of movement as of late, as far as layoffs. I did a whole rant about the LA Times laying off over 100 people. We know what happened at Sports Illustrated. So for a long time, I kind of felt like since I move in both worlds, since I move in news and sports, I would be okay because sports is always going to be a thing. But now we're seeing it starting to just be across the board. People are just getting laid off just because. And so as a journalist, specifically as a Black journalist, because we still have to pay the Black tax, you know, we still have to work twice as hard to get half the credit. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about the trend that's happening right now in journalism?
Yeah, I'm absolutely concerned. And I was talking about this with a friend of mine who's on a show with me, Justin Walters, who's now on ESPN, fellow Black journalist from New York. And we were talking about this in how would the people we mentor and the young journalists that we know, particularly specifically, we're talking here about Black journalists too.
Right.
The lack of opportunities for them, especially in sports, to learn things at the ground level that we had that already have sort of eroded away. There are things I like about the way things have changed in journalism in that it's become more accessible in terms of things with social media and for more people to do their own things. You and I have had our own platforms, Jackie.
Yeah.
You're doing it so brilliantly. And I think that has allowed us as Black journalists to carve our own path and also let people know we don't need you. And nobody, you can't stop us because we have done things on our own. We've learned, we had to hone our craft on our own, Jackie. We had to create our own content, build our own context, get our own guests. And that boded well for us. So one of the things I try to tell young people is there's value in creating your own content. There's value in building your own brand. The problem, though, is a lot of these companies now, when you're trying to get in to do good work in journalism at places, A, they don't want to pay. They're not willing to pay for good journalism and long form journalism. What happened at SI is extremely disappointing from everything that happened with people getting laid off to the AI stuff. That was embarrassing.
Very.
Then you look at the LA Times. There's folks I know there who've done amazing work and are now out of jobs. And when you couple that with the fact that newsrooms aren't diverse, particularly in sports, right? Where I believe 6% of sports journalists are Black. That is terrible and reflective to the population. And then you look around newsrooms, you really have to ask yourself, what's changing? Is it changing? All we're seeing is people are losing jobs. There's less money being invested into, and I don't want to say bad journalism or good journalism, but a lot of long-form journalism, a lot of investigative journalism, a lot of journalism that goes into talking about stories of people of color. This is why somebody, for the listeners and viewers, this is why somebody like Jackie is important, because of the work she does in the LA community, telling stories of people of color, and she needs to tell more of those stories. We need more people like her. These things are important. I think what I try to do is important in making sure we have representation of people I interview and talk to. But what's really changing is what you have to ask you. Things are not getting any better in terms of diversity. We saw a lot of performative talk after 2020 about what was going to happen. That hasn't, the numbers, they just came out with the report last year. The numbers are pretty much still the same. And listen, I'm going to be very blunt about this. That is on the white people that work in these institutions to do this. You talk it, you want to do it. Diversity isn't just hiring white women. You can't just do that. A lot of times that's what I think these places make diversity look like. And it's like, and listen, women of all races need opportunities too, but there's more. Are you looking and saying, do we have black people? Do we have Asian folks? Do we have our Latino brothers and sisters being represented? How diverse are we truly? And so I think there's a lot of problems. It's concerning with layoffs in journalism. I'm concerned about opportunities for young people and how they're going to learn here. So I think it's all very concerning. But I think is honest in this, Jackie, is that more people like us, more journalists have to have this conversation. More journalists have to speak out against this. Like, right. We're journalists. We're here. We're in this. We see right. The problems of what it is. Oh, and the other thing, too, is I also want to add, some of these places, especially in TV, they're not paying people a good wage, and they're expecting young people to come and do that. And some young people are looking at this and saying, I'm not doing that for this.
Right.
And I don't blame them. They're not wrong about that. I don't blame them, because the quality of life for what they get paid, it's absolutely ridiculous, and they're getting exploited.
Yeah, I like the digital space, but the other day I was just looking, like, let me just see, if what getting back into the TV space is looking like. And of course, that means you have to open up into the entire country just to see. And I saw a job in Florida that's paying, I think it's $67,000 a year, which definitely is more than $67,000 a year in California. I just want to be clear on that.
Right.
But they want you to have a master's degree. No. Not for $67,000 a year. Are you crazy?
I'm curious. What was
that? It's a multimedia journalist reporter with a master's degree. Why would I need a master's degree to be a multimedia journalist? Why?
So there's a couple things there I would think people should consider. The question that Jackie just asked, why would you need that? And then you think about it being the state of Florida. And then you think about how they try to stop things for people in the state of Florida. Who are they trying to shut out there? Right. And
exactly.
And you know what's funny, Jackie? You know this as a journalist. A lot of times when people have thought about, should I get my master's in journalism or should I do that? Most people tell you, like, if you've got the experience, it doesn't really matter. And that is true.
Right.
I can't tell you the last time I applied for a job, went for a job, and somebody asked me about my education. People care about your experience. What have you done? What can you do for their company?
Mm-hmm.
So a bachelor's generally for this job is sufficient. And
it's
then plus
more
your
than
experience.
Enough.
Yeah. A master's in journalism matters if you probably didn't study journalism in terms of your undergrad degree.
Right.
And that's that. So but I guess what I'm saying is Florida is going to be Florida. That's what I'm saying. I'm not surprised.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And representation matters as well. And I know people get tired of the diversity hiring, but it's not a diversity hiring. In the WNBA, it makes no sense that the majority of the players are black, but there's only one black PR person. And we just got her. She just started. That's insane to me.
Yep.
And the reason for that is because you know that black people relate to black people, and you don't want to have someone in a position of authority who can help cultivate those black stories. And if you don't know, to Dexter's point, when you're talking about college education used to be damn near free, but very, very affordable. It wasn't until your boy Reagan came in and he decided that we can't let everybody, specifically black people, get educated. We got to make it more expensive. So when you ask somebody for a master's degree to do something you really can learn with just a bachelor's and associates, if we being honest about it, then you're really trying to block out a certain number of people. And just know that we know, and we're going to have a workaround.
Yeah.
But speaking of, I want to get into, because it is the political season, which is never a fun time for me because I get just so tired of the rhetoric. But conservatives are out and about. And I saw something that I was like, I feel like this is old, and it is. So in 2022, I believe it was, 2022, Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach Todd Bowles, he made a statement that I thought was very obtuse, to say it nicely, when he was asked about, hey, how did it feel to look across the field and see Mike Tomlin and you two are staples in the NFL? And knowing that, what this means to black people. And he was like, I'm just going to play the clip for you guys right now so you can hear what he said.
I have a very good relationship with Tomlin. We don't look at what color we are when we coach against each other. We just know each other. I have a lot of very good white friends that coach in this league as well. And I don't think it's a big deal as far as us being coaching against each other. I think it's normal. Wilkes got an opportunity to do a good job. Hopefully he does it. and we coach ball. We don't look at color.
But you also understand that representation matters too, right? And that when young aspiring coaches or even football players, they see you guys, you know, they see someone that looks like them, maybe grew up like them, that has to mean something.
Well, when you say you see you guys and look like them and grow up like them, it means that we're eyeballs to begin with. And I think the minute you guys stop making a big deal about it, everybody else will as well.
Okay, so two problems with that. Well, there's a plethora, but the two that stood out for me the most was the follow-up question from a white woman that said, you have to understand. Basically, what she was saying to me, you have to understand, the NFL had to be sued to pay out CTE payments to Black people because they had doctors saying that Black people were less intelligent from the womb. So let's not play that like there's not racism in the NFL. You have to understand that people had to sue just to get jobs. You have to understand that the Rooney Rule existed to try to get Black people in position. You got to understand that Black quarterbacks weren't a thing for the longest time because white people in leadership thought that Black people weren't smart enough to play that position. So let's not act like seeing two people across the field from each other who are successful in two prominent positions in the NFL isn't a big deal. And his response was, nah, it's not. Y'all are making it a big deal. Dexter, your thoughts.
My thoughts are, I have a lot of thoughts on this. The first point I will make, whenever somebody tells you they don't see color, do not trust that person. Do like not trust salesman. That person. Yeah, don't
trust me.
Yeah, don't trust that person. Like, I hate that. I hated when the Michigan assistant coach said that recently. Mm-hmm. I think it's ridiculous. I want somebody to see me for who I am as a Black man in this country. I'm proud of my ethnicity. I'm proud of my culture, my heritage. I want somebody to see you as a Black journalist. Yes, you should see me. If you say you don't see me, I'm really questioning. And for Todd Bowles as a Black man to not understand in that point what that moment could mean, and I'm saying this as somebody who's a Steelers fan of Mike Tomlin, and what he does, I'm not sure Mike Tomlin agrees with what Todd Bowles said. To sit here and say that, not understand the significance in a sport that has had issues with race consistently, has had the Rooney Rule, had to have that as you brought up, still has an issue with hiring Black coaches, is maybe now just to the point where people are accepting that Black quarterbacks can play the position, and most of the quarterbacks in the league that are at the top of it are Black now. I'd say imagine seven of the that. Top 10 quarterbacks are Black. Imagine that. For him to not understand the significance of this, I think is disappointing. I think when people try to downplay the significance of any Black accomplishments, particularly like in Black History Month or at this time, I think it's disappointing. It's really disappointing from Todd Bowles, like, to not understand what he means in the space of history for Black coaches in the NFL. You're one of the few that have ever done it. You're one of the few currently that are doing it. So for people, it is going to be significant to see two Black men on the sidelines coaching, especially when you look at what happened with Brian Flores, when you still look at what happened with Colin Kaepernick, if I get into that. So when you're playing into you're making it, you guys are making it an issue, and I'd like to know who he's talking about with the you guys and doing it and saying that people are making more of it than what it is. It's like, no, people haven't made enough of Black history and Black excellence and talked about the Black, the disparities for Black coaches and coaches of color in the NFL. I think more needs to be made of it. Not enough has been done with it. And when people have tried to talk and push about those issues, like the great Jim Trotter of The Athletic has done, who used to work for NFL media, you look at what has happened around that and him losing his job, and not saying that was totally or directly into that, but it appears that way at least. And I spoke to Jim about this. So when you look at what's happened, when people try to bring up, you'll say it's not doing enough. Who's bringing it up? It says something that there was a white woman as a journalist who was there who asked the right follow-up question. I want to applaud her for that. She absolutely asked the right follow-up question there, Jackie. And for him to then poo-poo that and act like it's nothing, Todd Bowles being ridiculous. Let's call it for what it is. He's being ridiculous there. And I think he's not acknowledging the moment of Black history. And if I wonder who he thinks he's appeasing or playing to by saying that he doesn't see color. And I don't understand why, as a Black man, he doesn't want people to see him for who he is and what his place is in history.
Yeah. And I was kind of expecting that. So I've been following the social and I got to tell you, it really came about shortly after, what's her name? Nikki Haley said that, you know, this country isn't racist. You know, she feels like just because she's from India and she's had a great go of it, you know, how dare we call this country racist? And so, of course, as a conservative, this conservatives were like, oh, I can find a black person who said this too. So this is how this quote came about again. And for me, the only reason I've been following every single thread that has this him saying this is because if it was me, I would hope that in the last 2 years, the light bulb went off. And especially now that I'm being used as a tool for very conservative, trying to pretend like they're not, but very white supremacist thought processes. And I would think that at some point I would see a comment, even if it was like, you know what, guys, saying it in at that time, I felt this way, but in hearing it back, that was not the right thing to say. And this is why. But he hasn't said a word. I don't even know if anyone's brought it to his attention, but it's impossible with as many conservative threads that I have seen. And fun fact, y'all, if y'all see me following conservative people, it's not because I'm conservative. It's because they're great talking points to see how crazy some of these people are. But so I just got to stay in tune. But I would just think that by now he'd had to see it. And I would just hope there'd be some atonement. And the fact that there's not is just troubling to me.
I wonder, Jackie, I wonder how much, I was listening to you say that. I just wonder how much I think what we have to acknowledge sometimes is black people, you know, it's kind of into that term of like all kinfolk ain't skin folk, that
term,
right? You just wonder what his feelings are in the place he is in the success that he's had. And even within the NFL and being a coach and in the proximity to whiteness there, you don't know how that impacts everybody. Everybody doesn't look at that the same way. So you got, sometimes we've seen people in black spaces where they're just like, man, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy that right. I'm one of the only people. I'm never happy about that.
It makes me uncomfortable.
It makes me uncomfortable. I think it's disappointing. And we need to question, you know, I think when that reporter asked the follow-up question, you know, I think what she was really saying, which is a question I always feel like we should ask about this stuff, is do you understand the significance? Because to understand the significance, you have to actually question, why are we here? We just talked about previously about what's going on in journalism, right? And we could talk about the numbers. And I think the question is always like, when you see the numbers in that bad, it's like, we need to ask ourselves why we are here. When we talk about somebody, it's like, hey, this is the first black person to do this. And it's like, why did it take so long? That's a question we don't see, but people don't want to talk about that. And I mean, specifically white people in the position don't want to talk about that because it makes them uncomfortable. But it's the question that's asked. You have to get uncomfortable with that history. Why is it that in 2022, back then, we are so excited still about two black men on the field? It's because of the history around the NFL. And we have to talk about those things. You can't ignore that.
Dexter, it's always so great talking to you. East Coast people, y'all need to follow him. Where can they follow you on social media?
They can follow me at DHenryTV. You can check me out on SNY, Sportsnet New York, and New York Post. YouTube channels, content is there. Jackie Ray is on there with me sometime. Going to have something with her really soon. So excited, always excited to talk to you, Jackie. I love doing that. It's still amazing. We have not met in person. I've told you this before.
We got to change that. All right, you guys make sure you follow Dexter Henry on all things social media at Dexter Henry TV. He is phenomenal at what he does. And also, little nugget here, if you are a black journalist, DM me, because I will tell you, I've been going through some things in my professional career and I just threw up a lob. I didn't know. I'm one of those people that for whatever reason, anytime I'm going through something, I feel like I got to go through it alone. I don't know where that comes from. And I've got amazing, amazing friends, who have literally said, hey, what are you doing? I'm on my way. So I don't know. There's no logical reason why when I go through something, I'm like, okay, I got to fix it. Aside from the fact that I am a fixer. I am the person who tries to fix everything. So maybe that's just it. Like I just hunker down and say, oh, I got to fix it. But I kind of just threw up this lob in the air, like, and I didn't even say anything. I just say, y'all. And even Dexter Henry, he was like, oh, I know from that side you going through it. Let's have a talk. And from Dexter Henry, Mike Hill, Mo Kelly, Twyla Sharp, my bestie Raven, Caitlin from the Long. I just had this whole circle of people that could just tell that my energy was off, and they circled around me. It's a beautiful thing to see. So if you're a black journalist, tap in with me. I think every now and then we might just get so used to paying that black tax and just putting our head down and plowing through that maybe we don't reach out enough. Let's create this circle and let's just be able to do a group text that says, hey, I'm going through, and let's just really lift each other up. You don't have to be a Black journalist. I think Black people in general, we just kind of need that. I just want to give a huge shout out to my support system, because it wasn't even like I was going through something major, but it was definitely bothering me. And the way y'all showed up for me really just warmed my heart, because I wasn't expecting that. I didn't ask for the help, and then y'all just sensed it. And that's the importance of having a good circle. And I don't know if you've been checking out this political landscape, but I do think as Black people, we all we got. I say that every week. I think that's just going to be my motto. So y'all remember that. And I look, no disparages to anybody else who's not Black. Get your circle, do your thing. We all need support. But I think if you check out this political landscape, specifically as to how the anti-Blackness is on the rise, we all we got. So remember that until next time. Make sure you go and check me out on Spotify. Even if you're watching me on YouTube, check me out on Spotify. Give the podcast 5 stars. Go on to YouTube. Give me a thumbs up. Make sure you leave a comment. Trying to grow this, y'all. So grow with me. And then make sure you stay tuned, because my bestie Raven and I are going to be doing another show that's going to be coming soon. So make sure you look out for that. And remember, you guys, life is short. Make it good. We'll see you next time.